nifty dope move and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Give it back to Katie. No,
from local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.
Well, good afternoon, Bloomington Normal, and thank you so much for joining us. This is the Red Zone from ISU on the pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Anthony Ferretti, Leo Stoddard, Joey Dwyer with you guys. And boys, it's kind of a different setup we got this week, obviously not being in the studio.
Yeah, miss you guys, but we got to do what we can to stay safe. So you're getting a little, everybody watching this will get a little sneak peek into what at least my bedroom looks like. So I hope you all enjoy it.
Yeah, it feels like we just figured out last week's setup with everybody in different rooms, and now we have another thing to learn. But that's just life with COVID. We just got to keep adapting and learning from all these new situations.
Yeah, just to catch up some people on, if they are not aware of what's been happening, some on-air talent at ZND has been tested positive for the virus. So as of that, our station had to shut down. Because of that, obviously none of us could be in the station, the studio, the offices, anywhere about that. It did get deep cleaned by the facility workers, so we're really thankful for that, and we're thankful for the backup plan that we have to finally be bringing it to you guys. So without further ado, boys, let's get started. Some big news recently with the White Sox. They've been on a streak lately, but Lucas Giolito coming out with the no-hitter in Tuesday night's game.
And, Leo, you can start with this one because you're rocking the Sox shirt right now. So you're obviously way excited about it.
Definitely had to dress for the occasion. Obviously, this past week has probably been as close to of a coming-out party as the White Sox can have, where in terms we've known they've had talent in terms of the White Sox fan base all season. We've known this is what they're capable of, but I think this has been them showing the national stage what they are capable of. This power surge they had at Wrigley Field this weekend, which is all the home runs, Jose Abreu going nuclear against the Cubs. What was it, 6 home runs in 3 games? Correct me if I'm wrong. But then, so that was a great series against a very good team. Then coming into the Pirates, had a little bit of a power surge in their own stadium that knocked out the broadcast, which was unique enough on its own, but that didn't include the fact that Lucas Giolito threw a no-hitter, which, oddly enough, there's a missing segment of that part of the fan base never saw since nobody was in the stadium. But this was as big of a weekend as the White Sox could have possibly had because they have taken the national spotlight, and hopefully they don't crack under it. They could keep running with it. Now the rest of the league knows what the White Sox are capable of, and hopefully this is just the start of something bigger.
And with their win against the Pirates again today, that puts them right up there, second, if not first, in the AL Central. So they're shaping up for a nice little postseason run if they can keep this hot streak going. And it is just so exciting. After watching the Sox for so many years have all these prospects and never be able to put something together, I'm so excited to finally be able to watch, hopefully, fingers crossed, and I don't want to jinx it, I'll knock on wood right now, but watch Sox postseason baseball. I'm over the moon with how they've been performing as of late.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you guys. Just the amount of young talent that they've had. We've seen them really just trying to rebuild their franchise after their 05 World Series win and trying to bring in some of the young guns that they've gotten. It's been really promising. Luis Robert, Eloy Jimenez, Yoan Moncada, they've really been stepping it up. Now we got Giolito with the no-hitter. It seems like things are really shaping up. And, yeah, we most definitely could see them in the postseason, which would be a nice thing for Sox fans to see.
Definitely. And do you guys know, I might just be out of touch with this, but how is the MLB playoff picture going to look this year with the shortened schedule?
It is an expanded field. I believe three additional teams per league make it now. So the White Sox, if they basically finish top three in their division, they are set, which with how the lack of competition in the AL Central, they could easily not only finish top three, but they could maybe take second or fight with the Twins for first in that division.
I think looking at the playoffs, it looks like eight teams from each conference are going to make the playoffs. And as of now, the Sox are in the playoffs. So as long as they can keep this going, obviously going to be difficult to try and go a perfect 6-0. Even though they have lost, but it's going to be hard to keep the win streak going. But if they can keep it going, stay hot, keep the bats hot, stay solid on defense, they could definitely get something in the making and really make a push for themselves this postseason.
And I feel – oh, sorry, you go ahead, Leo.
Well, you brought up how it is a shorter season, so that could really be beneficial to the White Sox because you could ride out these hot streaks even longer or vice versa. If you're cold, you might stay cold all season. But if you're hot like the White Sox bats have been – you know, it's a smaller sample size, so they could ride this out until the postseason.
What I was going to say is I feel super bad because all my friends who are Cubs fans, and there are a lot of them, especially here at ISU, but I've been talking because the Cubs have been very good all season. So I've been kind of talking a little-ish, you know, saying like how this championship isn't going to really matter because it's such a shortened season. So I'm like, imagine the Cubs being so good in the season that doesn't even count. But now the Sox are good. I'm kind of eating those words a little bit because, you know, it's like what they're saying about the NBA and the NHL. Even though it's a shortened season, everybody's still competitive and everybody is still fighting for that goal. And now, especially in the MLB with the shortened season, I think you really get to see what teams are made of because usually with 162 games, it's a lot of like streaking who gets hot at the right times, but there's not as much time for that this year. So I think that whoever comes out on top, especially in the postseason, it's really going to be a better look at, okay, who actually has the highest accumulation of talent that can perform together.
Absolutely. I saw a statistic basically equating with a shorter schedule that one regular season game this year is worth about three regular season wins in a normal season. So there is an extra importance on every game. You don't have time to waste a game when your fifth starter is pitching. You need your best performance every day because it's easier to get ahead then since the games are worth more. But also, if you get behind, you have less time to make it up as well. So I think the White Sox and the Cubs, to your point, have been taking advantage of that. Both teams have really been running with this shortened schedule and putting their best foot forward every day. And it's shaping up for a very exciting finish this season.
With the games meaning so much more, would you guys want to see a shortened MLB season in the future? Because I think this makes games so much more fun to watch now that there's so much more pressure. And I can only imagine that with fans in the stands, with games that have so much pressure added on them, I think that it would be really cool. Not even if – I'm not saying we go down to 60 games, but maybe cut to 120. Or,
I was going to say maybe cut out like the last month of the season because – September baseball, sometimes when you're out, when being a Sox fan, we've seen a lot of that.
You know, when you're out of it by the All-Star break, you know.
Those games don't always matter. Like, you see teams where they go into lose by design mode to try to get a better draft pick, and they're not putting out the best lineup. It's just not as competitive of a product. So if you knock off maybe like 20 games from this season, it could matter a lot more, and you could see a lot more competitive baseball later in the season.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you guys. You brought up a really good point with it trying to be a shortened season. I think it would make for a more entertaining season because then we can really see the mindset of these teams where, oh, instead of having, you know, 20 games left to try and clinch a playoff spot, you know, might be down to like five. So really try and see where they're at. The fans will be able to get into it too. The way with the shortened season has just fatigue might be able to be setting in because I think with this current season, it's like, what, 60 games and 62 days, so they're going to be pretty tired. But I think 162 game season, a bit too long, like you mentioned, you know, that last month of the season, I'm sure, you know, a lot of these teams are probably like, okay, we've clinched, now we should really be in playoff mode. So I would agree, maybe knocking some of the games off, maybe even having like an 80 game season, because we see the NHL and the NBA, they've got an 82-game season, so this could easily do that and give them enough time.
Yeah, there's got to be a sweet spot somewhere between maybe 60 and 162 because another factor you have to worry, you kind of brought it up a little bit with the fatigue, but over a longer season, these players get worn down too. By August and September, players are playing through so much. For the most part, playing at less than 100% every day, you have, kind of have to fight through that at the end. So by the time they get to playoffs, they are just playing with whatever's left in the tank, playing through a lot of different ailments. So if you knock off maybe a couple of weeks at the end of the season, that could really result in better playoff baseball because the players will still feel a little more fresh, will have a lot more left to give.
And I think anything that the MLB can do to make the game more fun to watch, just because of how the NBA has kind of taken over that slot as second most popular sport in the U.S. as of like the past 10 years, just because of their ability to market to people our age or younger, their presence on social media contrasted with the MLB. So I don't know. That's something to keep in mind. If a lot of people like this shortened format, high pressure situations, I think that's something that the MLB might actually consider. So, and a bunch of other rule changes, like the 7-inning games people are liking, the DHs in the NL. So I think that's there's a lot of change and a lot of good that can come from the MLB that who haven't necessarily handled the situation the best. But looking forward, they can take some of these ideas and run with them a little more. And I'd be really excited to see what Rob Manfred and the rest of the league would do try to expand on some of these.
Yeah, you brought it up how the MLB really just seems to be hurting themselves all the time with their marketing. Let's not forget, they almost didn't have a season this year. Like, they almost lucked their way into what's been one of their more popular seasons in recent memory. So if they could see what worked from this season, what people liked, and then implement that in the future seasons, they could try to get back that younger fan base that they've kind of been losing in recent years.
Yeah, I would definitely think so. We'll have to see what happens in the MLB. As you mentioned, thankful they have a season. I mean, the players really wanted to play, although they had to sacrifice some of it. But, you know, nonetheless, they were able to have baseball. But that'll just about do it for our baseball talk. But when we come back, we're going to have an interview with someone on the Redbird coaching staff. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Welcome back to The Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Earlier this week, I had the chance to sit down with the new assistant coach for Redbird Soccer and talk about his journey to ISU. I'm here with head coach Brendan Buku of Redbird Soccer. Coach, thanks so much for coming on the show.
No problem. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
No problem. What are your thoughts on coming to ISU and continuing your coaching career with the Redbird women's soccer team?
Yeah, you know, I've been around ISU as an institution and I've been around the ISU women's soccer program for a bit. And I've learned quite a bit about, you know, their environment and how they function. And one of the biggest things for me was it's like so community oriented, you know, everybody's connected. You feel that sense of like belonging a little bit. And it's just one of those environments where it is that everybody that come into the environment, they kind of always have a story to tell, or ISU somehow plays a vital part in their entire or chapter in their book of life, you know? So it's refreshing to always be a part of an environment like that one where you have good people working around you. You have an organization that is all about, you know, community being family oriented and that community connection. And then two, it's just always good to be able to give back in some kind of way, not only to the sport, but to just in life in general and work with student athletes and just help them accomplish their goals and aspirations on the field and by extension, just to prepare them for that next phase after college.
And then when you were in your job search, trying to see where you wanted to try and coach next, what stood out to you specifically about the Redbird soccer program?
Well, I think it goes back to that same, you know, I think the pandemic kind of brought about many different challenges in that there were limited amount of jobs available. You know, as you know, my wife, she lives here and she is our alumni at Illinois State. So that was one of the huge like pulls. She would always brag about Illinois State, and Illinois State is always mentioned. We can't go a day without talking about Illinois State, you know.
Interesting. She's an alum.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, she is an alum.
Did I know that? Good to know.
Oh, yep. She's an alum and played, represented the program. Yeah, and it has been a huge, huge impact on her life. And, you know, I could just tell that every time she even talk about Illinois State, you could tell that it is significant to her. And through her, I think I learned a lot about Illinois State and what the institution and organization stand for. So it was an easier transition when I sat down and I spoke to Coach Sylvie, and he said, listen, we have, you know, a volunteer position opening. At that time, I already moved to the area because I said my wife lives here. And it was one of those things where it was a no-brainer, you know. I could still have that aspect where it is I'm connected to the game and still be in an environment where it is, it's fun, it's energetic, you know, you connect with good people. So it was just one of those things where, you know, I always believe in, like, you know, destiny just kind of creates itself and everything happens for a reason. So moving here, it was like kind of one of those things, like, you know, it's a new chapter, it's a new journey. And then boom, the opportunity came and then it happened. And since then, it's just been great. Like, the people have been great. The athletes been great. You know, administration been good about everything. So, yeah, I would say it's just one of those things where it was probably destined to happen, you know?
Yeah, I got you. I've heard that a lot too. You know, everything kind of like happens for a reason. Yeah. Can you take us through a little bit of your career path to how you got to ISU? Like, did you play sports in college? And then, like, besides being the assistant, I believe, men's coach at Dayton, you know, what other coaching gigs have you had?
Yeah, my journey is real, real crazy, to be honest with you. I am. So I grew up in a real, real small, I won't say city, it's more of a town or neighborhood in the Caribbean, Trinidad and Tobago. And at that point in time, you know, soccer was the highlight of my life. I was playing with one of the top high school teams in the nation. I represented my country on a U17, U20 level. So soccer was giving me everything, you know. It was taking me in different avenues that I never imagined. And then, you know, right or wrong, when I was like 20, 21, I had the opportunity to go to University of New Mexico to represent that organization and play soccer on scholarship. And that for me was one of the things that kind of took me on the path and started to elevate my understanding of the game and also my love and my passion for the sport. And then and there, I think I knew that after playing, whenever that come, I would always want to coach. So I played at New Mexico. I end up going and finished my master's at Central Methodist University, which is an NAIA school in Missouri. I was fortunate enough, after finishing there, I went back home to Trinidad and I was offered a pro contract. I played there for about a year and a half, 2 years. And then, you know, somewhere along that journey, I always wanted to play because soccer was always an integral part of my life. And I just felt like, you know, something was missing. And I knew I wanted to coach. And then the opportunity came to go back to Central Methodist as a graduate assistant, where I would complete my master's and at the same time kind of dive into college coaching and begin my journey along that path. So came back, was fortunate enough to work with a very talented coach there, Coach Alex Nichols, and the rest of the staff. Spent about 2 years there, and then boom, like everything else, opportunity came again at Dayton. My former coach at New Mexico, he was the assistant there. He also worked at Dayton, and he rang me up and he said, hey, Dayton is looking for an assistant. I think you need to apply for the job, you know? So I applied for the job, went up, met with Coach Currier, met with staff administration, and it was one of those things where it was like destined to happen again. Everything just kind of clicked, and then boom, a month later, I was packing shops up to move up to Dayton, had to live in a hotel for about a week, and just hit the ground running, you know, and was just fortunate to spend a very, very immense, I would say, a successful period at Dayton, where it is I was able to learn, I was able to grow, I was able to adjust. I was dealing with big budgets, you know, having interaction with admin, with staff, you know, travel, recruiting. It was just on a larger scale, you know. And then from there, I always know that, okay, this is definitely the environment that I want to be in. But I always knew, like, what's next, you know, because you're always looking for the next challenge. And Dayton is one of those places where there's a transition point. And, you know, that is also where I met my now wife, you know. she was coaching on the women's side, and we met each other. And you know, things kind of clicked, and it went from, you know, she left Dayton and she ended up taking other jobs. And then it was just always one of those things where it is we had planned at some point in time to be in one central location. So yeah, with ISU, it was one of those things, British, because she was so involved in the environment, and you may not know this, but she's also an assistant with the women's team. She's the second assistant on staff. So when I moved to Bloomington, I started doing some stuff with Illinois Fire, the club in town. And then I was always in close contact with Coach Sylvie. And, you know, we sat down one day and he was like, hey, what do you think about this? He's like, I don't know if you'll be interested. And I was like, yeah. I was like, why not? And then we shared some conversation. The conversation was supposed to be an hour, and it ended up going to like 2-3 hours. But it was just good, healthy conversation. And right then and there, everything just clicked. And then, you know, a week later, I was looking at coming on board, helping out the girls. We had the first day of practice. I got to meet the team. You know, we run through a session. So, yeah, I would say it's been crazy. If I was supposed to sit back and say, oh, yeah, I'll be at, where would you be in 5 years? I'll be like, listen, man, I have no idea I'll be in 5 years. But I'll tell you what, whatever opportunity come, I'll be ready for it, you know, and I'll adjust and I'll adapt and I'll take it as it goes. So I think Illinois State is one of those things, like anything else, where everything happened for a reason. It was probably destined to happen. And this is probably the time for it. The time is here. The time is now. So, you know, I'm just ready and excited and embracing it as best as possible.
All righty. And what was it like meeting the players? You said you got to briefly meet them. I know based on what I saw a little bit on Twitter, they got to practice a little bit of it before some things happened in athletics with the outbreak. So what was it like kind of getting to personally be acquainted with the players and coaches of the team?
Yeah, you know, for the staff, it was easy. I gel and measure the staff well because I think, you know, we all have the similar philosophies and we're thinking soccer-wise aligned along the same way, you know, good-natured people as well. You know, and with the girls, there's always a little bit of nervousness when you're coming into a new team environment, you know. It's like, oh, we have a new coach, like, you know. But it was one of those things where the girls was just very accepting from day one. You know, they embraced me on that first day. We didn't have much. It was probably like an hour, maybe hour 15 long session. We was able to get some work in. We shared some light laughs here and there. But, you know, overall, it was just refreshing to see how, you know, they were welcoming. And nobody really, you know, nobody really made me feel like an outcast or an outsider. Everybody was just very, like, you know, welcome to our environment. And you could see that same sense of community, that same sense of family. And I think it goes back to being good people, you know, and credit to the staff for bringing in girls with a good solid moral foundation, and credit to their families for raising them that way. But I think, you know, what you have is a very solid environment with good natured people who work into what the same common goal. So yeah, for me it was just refreshing.
Yeah, I definitely think so. With this Redbird soccer program, you mentioned it a bit, you know, with the community and family. You know, that's kind of one of the reasons I wanted to go to ISU was, you know, that sense of community here where, you know, I could feel at home and feel that I could fit in with the Redbird soccer team. You know, we've seen the success that they've had since head coach Brad Sylvie took over the team and even prior to him. So with everything that's going on, with this crazy pandemic, do you think that we will see Redbird soccer at some point during the 2020-2021 year?
You know, that's a tough one, man. I'm always optimistic, and I would love nothing more than to see us get back out there. But I think with the current situation right now, it's a little bit, it's uncontrollable, you know, and it's like 1 week. In 1 week time, things could change, you know. So I don't know if right now in fall 2020, seeing a game action against other opponents will be possible. But I know for sure, you know, we'll be preparing, we'll be on the field, we would create as a staff, and I'm sure as a athletic department, create the safest and most healthiest environment for our student athletes to compete. And hopefully, you know, in spring 21, if the pandemic slows a little bit and be able to have a better control over things as an institution and how we how everything is being dispersed, I think we might see some action in spring. But I think it's just too much uncontrollables to really speak on it right now, you know.
Yeah, I got you. I kind of understand. Well, I know you know, some of the fans' ranks is obviously the, you know, the athletes kind of anxious to just to kind of get back. But yeah, you know, I try and remain optimistic too. You know, just we'll kind of, you know, see where the tide takes us for now.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. We just set your sail and just go with the waves, you know.
Yeah. No. Well, is there anything else you'd like to add, Brendan?
No, I think, you know, for me, it's just it's obviously it's a complex time, but you can look at it two ways, you know. For me, this time has been probably the most refreshing since the pandemic started. A lot of good things have happened in my life since the pandemic happened. And there is probably a lot of challenges as well. But instead of focusing on the challenges, you more so tend to focus on solutions and focus on what could be done. How could you maximize this time? Could you, you know, strengthen your bond between your players, your staff, your family? Could you explore other ways as a coach to grow, to develop? Could you explore other ways as a player to coach, develop? And then could you just overall just, you know, whether this is all, instead of looking at it as all negative, look at it as a challenge and just something else that you have to overcome, you know? And I think as a program, that's how Red Bull Soccer has been looking at it, as a challenge that we will overcome. And I feel like all institutions and programs across the country probably holding similar mindset, you know. And you look and you see teams, professional teams, whether it's basketball, MLS, whatever have you, they're out there and they get in to share their passion and enjoy this game that they love. And you know, now more than ever, I think we just have to be so thankful, because things could be a lot worse, to be honest with you. It could be way worse, you know. So it's just appreciation, thanks, you know. Showing care to everything, and then just taking one day at a time and staying positive.
All righty. Well, thanks again, Coach, for your time.
Yep. No problem at all. I've said I'm honored for you guys to have me on, and I want to thank you a lot for taking the time to chat.
Once again, big thanks to Head Coach Brendan Buku for being on the show. We're going to take a break. You're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Red Bird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Welcome back to The Red Zone on the Pulse of Red Bird Nation, 103.3 WZND. Anthony Ferretti, Joey Dwyer, Leo Stauder with you guys. We talked about the interview with Head Coach Brendan Buku. We talked about the MLB. Now let's dive into it a little bit with the NBA and the Milwaukee Bucks and what's kind of been brewing there.
And for everybody listening or watching this, we're recording this Wednesday night. So the news about the Milwaukee Bucks not coming onto the court and protesting the game against the Orlando Magic happened maybe 2 or 3 hours ago. And I was watching that live, and my roommate and I were watching all of the games get canceled. And it seems, I was just listening to the broadcast, and it seems like a very appropriate action, because these players feel like while basketball is a huge part of the culture of our country, there are a lot more important things happening right now. And so I think this is a really good movement by the players. I think the league is doing a great job in handling this and letting the players decide their fates and not trying to take in and do any punishment or anything like that for the players, just letting them get their message across. I think it's a really classy thing for the NBA to do. And I think it's a really important message that the players are sending.
I definitely think it's an important message that the players are sending. Obviously they believe in something so much that they're backing it up by risking their platform for it, risking their livelihood by boycotting a game. So it's definitely something that, you know, you always see athletes, that intersection of sports and politics, where athletes take an issue and use their platform as an athlete to raise awareness for it or to take a stand on something. And the Milwaukee Bucks are doing it here in 2020 with everything going on. It's a very brave gesture, and it's very encouraging to see the NBA is taking their side, that they're not going to punishment, even that the Orlando Magic have refused to accept a forfeit from the Bucks, that they're also basically joining them in this stand, and that they will make up that game on a different day, is just a really, really interesting thing to see. Very uplifting to a certain extent.
Yeah, it's a really interesting time we're living in, with the light of social injustice trying to make its way into professional sports, and seeing these professional athletes, you know, trying to use their voices either on social media or during a press conference, trying to spark that change so that everyone can be equal and, you know, have a chance. And I think it's interesting, especially with these big figures, because you look at people that are trying to advocate for the game, like Giannis Antetokounmpo or LeBron James. You know, people are going to look at these big figures, you know, as, you know, mentors of the game, and try and follow in their footsteps to try and do what's right.
Yeah, and you look at what Milwaukee has on the line. They're considered by many to be almost a shoo-in for to play in the NBA Finals. They have a championship on the line, and they were willing to give up a playoff game because they believed in something so much. So they're using their platform to take a stand on something that they believe in so much that they're willing to give Orlando another chance, or possibly risk losing a game in the playoffs when these games mean so much.
And it's reports have come out in the last 15 minutes or so talking about how the NBA players are going to have a meeting at 8 o'clock Eastern time in the Orlando bubble. I can only imagine to talk about how they want to handle this situation and the shooting in Kenosha and what they want their response to be. And I wish obviously we had more to say about that, but I think no matter what the players decide to do, it's very reassuring that the league is going to have their back. And I think that all the other three major sports who have been doing a good job in supporting social causes and making sure they're on the right side of all of this, I think they should take note and realize that the players are using this platform, and to try to punish them for that is absolutely ridiculous.
Absolutely. It's a platform that the league has given them, and you put them up on this pedestal, and the players, that is, and to see them use their image, their likeness, for advocating for social change and to stand up kind of for what's right. It's very reassuring to see the league has their back on that, because, you know, in previous years, maybe the league wouldn't. You know, there was the shut up and dribble controversy with LeBron James a few years back, where people didn't want to see athletes take political stands. So this is almost a historical night for sports as we know it, to see where that intersection of politics and sports, where these athletes do have a voice and we care what they have to say.
And over the next couple of years, I think we're really going to see that change, where athletes are now going to be able to use their platforms. It's not like 30 years ago when Michael Jordan was afraid to endorse a Democratic politician out of North Carolina to alienate his fan base. I think now athletes are really starting to stand up for what they believe in the platform that allows them to do so. And obviously you're going to have people who, you know, will poo-poo down on that. But I think that the way that our society has been changing over the past 2 to 5 years, there's only going to be more. And I think that it's the league's responsibility to make their broadcasts and their entire league a safe space for these players to be able to do that.
Right. I think they're paving the way for, regardless of where you feel on certain issues, they're paving the way for people to have discussions. Maybe could inspire people to listen, hear what the other side has to say, maybe learn something and come together over it because of what these players are doing. It's not like you said, with Jordan years ago, where athletes were just athletes. With social media and the 24-hour news cycle, we almost feel like we know about who these athletes are, not just as players, but as people. So to see them use that to inspire change in society, that is really a unprecedented thing that who knows how it could take it, but hopefully the best that could come is just that people can come together and learn something from it.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, Leo, with social media in this day and age. Like, as we've mentioned, you know, with someone like Michael Jordan, they didn't have that platform, you know, in trying to build their reputation as a legendary basketball player. He couldn't do that on social media. But now that these players have social media, and not only the NBA, but those platforms to use to get their voice out, to try and get their stance on social justice, to fight for equality is really crucial. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if the NBA has got like a diversity group. I know the NHL has formed the Hockey Diversity Alliance, which was made by one of the players from the Minnesota Wild, Matt Dumba.
Yeah, that was after Akeem Alliu basically went forward with his Players Tribune article about the racism he faced in junior hockey and in the AHL. And so he came together with some players of color around the league to try to raise awareness to, as Dumba said, hockey's a great game, but it could be even greater to promote that culture of equality within the game and to make it more inclusive, not exclusive. So I'm sure the NBA, if they don't already, they will have a similar program pretty soon.
Anything else you want to add?
No? Yeah, I think I basically just said everything I needed to say, that hopefully these might be difficult discussions we need to have with people on either side, but the fact that we are having these discussions is a reason for optimism.
Yeah. It's definitely an interesting time we're living in with the pandemic and social injustice with everything going on. It will be interesting to see what happens sports wise to see how or what more they're going to do to try and fight for equality. But it looks like that will just about wrap it up for our NBA coverage. But when we come back, we are going to move things to the ice with some NHL action. And you're listening to The Red Zone on the Pulse Redbirdation, 103.3 WZND. Welcome back to The Red Zone here on the Pulse of Redbirdation, 103.3 WZND. Anthony Ferretti, Joey Dwyer, Leo Stauder with you. We've had a great show for you so far. We've talked about the MLB and Lucas Giolito's no-hitter. We talked about the interview with new volunteer assistant coach for Redbird Soccer, Brendan Buku. We talked about social injustice in the NBA with everything that's going on and the Bucks' intent to boycott Game 5. That'll bring us to our final segment talking about the NHL. And as my partner Joey Dwyer mentioned earlier, we are recording this a day prior. So if you're thinking our news might be out of date a little bit, it's because we're recording it a day prior so you guys can be able to listen to it.
And so, recording a day early, not optimal by any stretch of the imagination, but we do what we can. It's always a bummer. I mean, I guess it's not always a bummer because this is the first time that we've been closed out of the station and still had to do a show, but it's, you know, I'm glad that we can still do the show, and it's nice to talk to you guys about sports every Thursday, or I guess today Wednesday, but it gives me something to look forward to.
Yeah, it's definitely great that we were able to do the show this week because it was fun getting started. Obviously, last week was my first shift as producer, and then we get the news on Monday that the station's going off air, so it's almost like, I feel like we just got started, and now it's like we're going back to where we were last semester where we were more people to be on air. But so I'm just very, very grateful that our directors and our faculty advisor, Steve Cease, were able to give us this opportunity to be on air this week because we are very fortunate to have that and we are very grateful of it. We hope we can make the most of it.
Yeah, I would say it was well said, you know, trying just to see if we can make the most of it. Obviously, last semester, not the most ideal. Like, we came home for spring break, then we couldn't do Red Zone, and it was kind of a bummer because – Joey, I don't know about you, but with Scott Rosallo, who graduated, and myself, you know, we were starting to get a good rhythm going, and it was great trying to see what we could do, you know, the last half of the semester to try and close out the 2019-2020 school year of Red Zone.
Yeah, and it's a bummer that we didn't get to close it out properly with Scott. We miss him, but it's always great to be able to have Leo on the show. Leo, it was fun to have you when we went to Arch Madness and when you were the guest. So awesome to have you on as the producer. And I'm excited to hear what you got to say because ex-Brother Rice varsity hockey player Leo Stauder talking about the NHL, it does not get better than that.
Well, I feel like it's a rule now that we have to have at least one hockey player on the show. I feel filling the large skates of Scott Rizala. Obviously a very tough task because Scott was great as producer and a great news and sports reporter. So I hope I'm up to the task of replacing the ex-Chicago Bruin.
All I'm saying is Scott wears a size 8 skate at the best.
Good to know about that size 8 skate. Yeah. Been a while since I was skating. I don't even know what size I am. Maybe like size 12. Who knows?
I got my skates hanging on the closet right over there. I'll go strap them on. But talking about skates, which of these series do you guys want to talk about first?
Man, it's been a lot going on down to the Elite 8. A bummer that the defending Stanley Cup champions St. Louis Blues and the Chicago Blackhawks have both been eliminated. But we've got the Elite 8 of NHL teams going right now. We saw a very entertaining game Tuesday night between the Boston Bruins and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Tampa Bay, they're trying to get revenge on what happened last year. You know, they were the top seed, President's Trophy, got swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets. They were able to beat the Blue Jackets, but now they're on a quest to try and win the Stanley Cup, kind of like what Virginia did in the March Madness tournament to try and redeem themselves. But that series has been entertaining to watch, and it's been really physical.
Yeah, I'd say it's a series worth paying attention to. Because these are probably the two best teams left in the East in terms of depth and speed. These are two teams very capable of winning the Stanley Cup. So either of these two teams, I think, has what it takes to win it all. They have a lot of experience, more experience so than the Philadelphia Flyers. So I think it's going to be very telling to see who wins this series, because either team, I think, is capable of making a lot of noise as the playoffs progress.
Sorry for the facial expressions, Leo, but I was just very surprised to hear you say that, because I think whoever is coming out of the East is going to be the winner of the Islanders Flyers series, because I think both of those teams are super, super consistently good. I'm always impressed, and I've been especially impressed by the Islanders this playoffs. They play super like defensive, very fundamental. Fundamental is the word I'm looking for.
Well, that's Barry Trotz for you. He almost is a disciple of the 95 Devils, where they play that neutral zone trap style. It's not the most exciting hockey, but it's a very efficient style. And what he's been able to do, he's been able to kind of replicate a lot of the success he had with the Washington Capitals with the Islanders with less talent, because he relies on the system over the individuals. But you worry with the Islanders is they don't have that top-end scoring that some of these other teams in the East have. But so it's almost going to be, can they just limit their opponents to one goal, two goal per game, and just get opportune scoring when they can?
And I think in a couple years, the Islanders will have that top-end scoring. I mean, Barzal is an absolute unit, but he is so young. And right. So I think if not this year, as long as Barry Trotz stays on board and the Islanders keep going in the direction that they are going, I think that they're going to make a lot of noise. But the Flyers have also been super impressive since they went to Toronto and entered the bubble, going 4-0 in the play-in rounds and making quick work of the Habs. I think they're going to be a very fun team to watch, whoever they play. I think if Boston ends up winning and Philadelphia ends up winning, that would be the best series we get out of the playoffs. Two very, very physical teams and teams that do not like each other. And that goes back a long time.
Yeah, I was just going to say both really physical teams. With the Flyers, it's been really impressive with their run. I think a big part of why they've been so successful is their young stud in between the pipes for them in Carter Hart. He's been, showing tremendous heart. He's been, I believe he had a back-to-back games with shutouts. He was really being key, making key stops, and really just showing why he could be the next generation top-level goalie.
And it's always something when a 22-year-old kid can come in and be the better goaltender in a series that features Carey Price. That is super impressive, especially for somebody that young. And that's going to be a bright spot for the Philadelphia franchise for the next 15 years if he is able to stay healthy and keep this run going.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily like seeing good things happen to Philadelphia sports. We have a little attention on the NFL, but the Flyers, they are kind of a feel-good team because I think they're one of those teams where the not the pandemic helped them, but that time off really helped them because they look like a much different team ever since they went into the bubble. They took advantage of that round robin play, got the one seed, which they might not have been in a regular season. So they got a good seeding because they came ready to play and they've carried that through the playoffs. But I just think this Islanders matchup is going to be very tough for them. And it's going to be very telling to see how they respond to that adversity because that's just how the Islanders play. They just grind you out and you just kind of have to outlast them.
Yeah. With the Islanders, like you mentioned, Joey, they could be a team potentially in contention in a couple of years. Obviously, though, doesn't have that top talent score like they had in John Tavares in the past, but there are some younger guys who are on that team who are showing promise. You've got Anders Lee, you've got Anthony Beauvillier, and you mentioned Matthew Barzal. They're all able young players that, if they can get stronger, the more experience that they can get, can really be make it on that top line and be dangerous and really help them make a deeper push into the playoffs.
I forgot to mention Beauvillier when I was talking about the Islanders, but man, that kid is good.
I think what we're discounting a little bit in the playoffs is we're talking a lot about, so obviously the defense matters very much, but the physicality, I feel like that's an impact, a part of the game that gets a little overblown because you need that, but I feel like you need that speed to be much, to have success in the playoffs. Like we look at the teams that the past five Stanley Cup winners, five or six, like you had the Blackhawks and Kings trading cups in the early part of this decade, two very fast teams, the Penguins, fast, the Capitals and the Golden Knights in that series, two teams that had a lot of speed, just could get up and down the ice very quick. And even the Blues last year, that's how they were able to beat Boston, was just by getting up the ice quick and getting more shots on net, more scoring opportunities on odd man rushes. And when I'm talking about fast teams, two teams in the West that I think are fastest teams I've seen in years are the Colorado Avalanche and Vegas Golden Knights. Those two, I know the Avs are having a little bit of trouble with the Stars, but they're almost on a collision course to play in the conference final. That could be a very exciting matchup because those are two very deep teams, very skilled.
And the Avs are also so fun to watch. And I am not going to say a good word about the Golden Knights during this entire show because they beat the Hawks and I'm still bitter. But yeah, the Avalanche are super fun to watch. And Makar has just had an incredible rookie year. He'd be my pick for the Calder before the bubble. Afterwards, it's obviously Dominic Kubalik after the game he had against Edmonton. But, you know, it's neither here nor there. What I'm saying is the Avs are such a good team, but I think youth hurts them a little bit because a lot of their depth comes from some younger guys. And I think that's kind of showing in the Star series where they'll get up and then the Stars will come back with this core that they've had for so long and just hammer away. And the Stars, I hand up, had no faith in the Stars, even making it past Calgary, but they have just gotten hot at the right time because they look mean.
I think a big reason, though, they might have made it past Calgary is with the injury of Tkachuk, because I think Tkachuk was a big reason they were able to, you know, stay in that series and fight. But to your point with the Stars, no one really expected them to be this far, but the pool of players they have, veterans, playoff-wise, you got Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, you got some rookies stepping up, John Klingberg, their goalie, Antoine Khudobin, he's really been stepping it up, but you mentioned it with the Avalanche, just they have experienced guys like McKinnon, but playoff wise there's no one.
Well, I think this could be a big test for the Colorado Avalanche. We saw with the Blackhawks when they were beginning their dynasty, they had in 2009 they had a tough series in the second round against the Vancouver Canucks, a more experienced team, and so Colorado's down 2-0 early, but how does a young team respond to that? We saw the Blackhawks did, and it catapulted them to greater glory later in their run. So if Colorado can maybe face this adversity after two games, regroup, respond, and maybe blow past the Stars, this could propel them to some similar success to what the Blackhawks had.
Talking about teams that are a little young right now, but in a couple of years, the Canucks,
yeah,
in that series against St. Louis, I loved what I saw. My favorite moment in these playoffs so far was that Tyler Mott goal. where he did the one-handed deke around Petrangelo, who had lost his stick. But that was like just the prettiest goal I've seen in a while. And they have looked, they've looked really good. They've been skating really fast, and they've got an interesting young core. They've got Pettersson, Bo Horvat, a bunch of those guys who, aside from Pettersson, I was not like super up on coming into the league or in their first couple of years, but now they're starting to play as a cohesive unit. And I was like, wow, this team could really be a menace here in the West for a while.
Yeah, they're definitely a team to look forward to, not only for this season, but in the future, just because they have a lot of young players like Pettersson, Brock Besser, Quinn Hughes, obviously another Calder Trophy contender. So they could be very good. And I think they're giving Vegas a run for their money because they're another fast team where they might not have the scoring depth that Vegas has. They're just able to keep up with them. That pace of play that Vegas plays, that just we saw where they just outlasted the Hawks. The Hawks can keep up. Vancouver has that speed where they're able to just to keep up, keep rolling with the punches. And obviously it's worked out very well for them so far. And you mentioned former Blackhawk Tyler Motte just ascending to folk hero status in these playoffs. If he's going to get paid very handsomely because of what he's done here.
Yeah, I was going to say it too with Tyler Motte. It's kind of difficult to watch the Canucks, you know, given we got rid of Tyler Motte. I remember, you know, when I went to the NHL draft when it was in Chicago and Tyler Motte was going to be there the following day, and all of a sudden it announced he got traded. I'm like, wow. Because he, at the time, you know, he was a younger player that really could have helped bolster the Hawks franchise. But nonetheless, like you guys have said, he's really been able to step up, make his presence felt, be a key player for the Canucks in this run. And like you said, really been able to keep up with the Knights and give them a run for their money.
It does feel very Stan Bowman-esque to want to pay Tyler Motte like $7.5 million over 6 years when he's a free agent, just to bring back an old player who you shouldn't have gotten rid of in the first place, but then he's way overpaid. That feels very Stan Bowman. So maybe we will see a Tyler Motte return, but at the cost of Dylan Strome and Dominic Kubalik and you know, one other prospect.
Yeah, maybe we can't, because we saw Brandon Saad. We traded him. I believe he went to the Blue Jackets, then came back with us. So there is hope. I think if Bowman can try and get the right trade going to get Motte back.
Please, no. Please. I like the young core that we have now. It's decent. It's decent. And I don't think we need to mess with it. We just need to build on it.
And players like Tyler Motte are players that you don't go out and acquire. You develop them on your own and then replace him with other similar players. He's a guy. He's a third-line player, and yeah.
That's exactly right, Leo. He is. Like, that's perfect. He's a guy.
And, yeah, you just get somebody from the Ice Hawks to do what he can do, but you just got to have – that's where coaching comes into it, where you got to develop them and make them into that player, and we've seen he's just landed in the perfect spot in Vancouver and has been able to turn into that.
Maybe Matthew Highmore, he – got some playing time with the Blackhawks and this playoff series coming up from Rockford. So maybe he could be someone that the Hawks could develop into a better player in the future.
I think he's got the potential. He showed some stuff. He's got a lot of hustle, especially getting back on the back check. And that fourth line for the Hawks, really, I was very impressed. They were the only ones who really looked like they were in it fully during that Vegas series. So that was really fun to watch.
They're really trying to give that top line a run for their money. So we'll have to see what happens in the offseason. But it's nice to see that the young guns that we have on the team are showing some promise. You know, Kirby Doc, Dominic Kubalik had an outstanding postseason. Then we got David Camp. He's starting to step up a little bit. But we got those young players just, like, building around them. I think we can try and get ourselves a contention for another for Lord Stanley.
And that's how you manage the situation, a hard cap league, is you just have to keep replenishing the well with just young players like that. They might not be top end talent, but you just need guys that can play, cheap players that can play in your bottom six and contribute when called upon. And that's kind of why the Blackhawks have struggled in the past few years, is they missed out on a whole wave of prospects with losing guys like Motte, Hartman, Hinostroza, and Schmaltz. So you weren't able to replenish the team after the you traded a lot off. So now I think that next wave is coming up, so that could possibly help them contend in the next couple of years.
Well, it looks like that'll just about do. It's going to be an exciting finish to the NHL playoffs and see where the Hawks land. That brings us to our red zone question of the week, is who do you think is going to be going to win the Conn Smythe, or who you consider a finalist for the Conn Smythe? We have Nathan MacKinnon, Braden Point, Semyon Varlamov, or other, because there are 8 teams left. Those are 3 of them. You could definitely have another opinion, but sadly, boys, that'll just about do it for this week's episode of the Red Zone. Little bit different, but still able to speak with each other. It's kind of nice, though, because we did get to see everyone face-to-face, not like last week where I was able to see Joe, but sadly, I couldn't see Leo because he was in a different room.
Yeah, hopefully the whole face-to-face thing doesn't scare too many people away. I'm sure we've all been told multiple times that we have faces for radio, so hopefully it doesn't scare people away too much.
Honestly, yeah. It's a classic. That's a classic.
Faces Leo. For radio. Well, once again, a big thanks to everyone that was on the show. Just to recap what we talked about, we had Lucas Giolito and his fantastic no-hitter in the future with the White Sox, new assistant, volunteer assistant coach for Edward Soccer, Brendan Buku, the NBA and the Milwaukee Bucks on social injustice, and then finishing off with some NHL talk. So thank you for those topics, boys. It has been a pleasure. On behalf of Leo Stauder and Joey Dwyer, I'm Anthony Ferretti. You have been listening to The Red Zone on the pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WCND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And, of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6 right here on 103.3 WZND, the pulse of Redbird Nation.